You come from strong stock. Your father, a member of the famed Tuskegee Airmen, the stuff of legend and motion pictures. Your mother was a teacher. As you look back, or even at that time, was the inspiration and maybe emulation apparent?
I suppose so. It goes farther back than that. Either my grandmother was a teacher. One of my grandfathers was a farmer, and the other one was a cook on a paddle-wheeled steamboat on the Mississippi River. Yeah, so all of us come from history.
Sure.
Just that most of us don't recognize it. We don't realize that everybody is making a little bit of history.
I was thinking last night, you know, a short story or a novel unfolds a thought or a concept or a story in descriptive words and sentences, and then something came to me that I don't think I've ever pondered before. Is it mandatory for a poet to also be a good writer in general? Does poetry have to do the same thing as a story or a novel does?
I'd say a poet has to be a better writer than a fiction writer, than a prose writer, because a poet has to do everything a prose writer does, and in addition to that, shape the language. And I was thinking yesterday that my definition of poetry that I've always given to my students is that poetry is shaped language, and that one of the things that's happened in this generation is that people have thrown the shape out the window. I just read a book of poems that was made up of one or two paragraph musings, and it's called a book of poems. That's not poetry. That's thought and interesting thought, but poetry has certain aspects. Traditionally, in I think every language, poetry has certain aspects of rhyme, maybe, or sound echo, or rhythm, or regularized rhythm, which prose doesn't have. And now we have performance poets who, you know, they compose their poems on the computer, and then they perform them like stand-up comics, and people respond in the same way that they do.
Yeah.
Just either they're really funny or they're really moving and we cry, but it's acting. You look at one of the poems on the page, unless you've seen the poem perform, it reads like flat prose or even sometimes good prose. But I would argue that it doesn't read like poetry.
Yeah, I've had that discussion with other people of literary talent. I've tried to define what a poem is because it seems as if people write nowadays and they can just literally call it poetry and it's accepted as poetry.
Yes, that's true. Years ago when I first started teaching creative writing, one of the textbooks I used said in its introduction that students should say, "It's a poem because I say it's a poem." That was the dominant theme of maybe the 70s through the 90s.
Uh-huh.
But things are changing, I think, now.
What's the difference between reading a poem and hearing a poem? Should there be a noticeable difference between those two ways of absorbing a poem?
Well, hearing a poem is a way of hearing how the poet hears the voice of the poem. So hearing a poem is the closest you can get to the poet's idea of a poem. But I've been preparing to be on a panel about the future of the book, so I've been musing about these things. And just this morning, I was remembering Marshall McLuhan and his famous axiom, "The medium is the message." When you hear a poem, yes, you hear the voice. If you're lucky, you hear the rhythms. But poetry is made to be savored, not just heard once. In the case of reading a poem, you have to see yourself what the poet is seeing. It's like the difference between reading a novel and seeing a novel as a movie.
Sure.
If you've read the novel, you sit there thinking, well, that's not what he looked like. because you've seen it. You've used your faculties of imagination.
Yeah.
And that's the other wonderful thing about poetry, is that it makes you use your brain. it makes you look at the poem and say, oh, I see, she's rhyming every third line. I wonder what the next rhyme is going to be. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, that's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, and how often does another person's interpretation of a poem, as they read it, turn out to be a revelation for the poet himself or herself?
Exactly. Yeah, do you know this Denise Levertov poem about that?
I don't.
This is a really wonderful poem. She receives a letter from two high school students who say they've just written together an essay about one of her poems, and they ask her if she would mind reading it and telling them if they were right. So she turns a page, and there's their little essay, and she reads it and says, oh, for the first line, it's completely wrong. That's not what I had in mind at all. Oh, God, this is just completely wrong. Oh, look at that. And then she finishes their essay and goes back and reads her poem and realizes they were completely right. She had never read the poem that way before, but it was perfectly possible to read the poem that way.
Uh-huh. Marilyn Nelson is our guest. She is, of course, a poet, and she is coming to UW Eau Claire on Tuesday, April 23rd, for a poetry reading, 7 o'clock. And the theme is African American History in Verse. It'll be at the Woodland Theater in the Davies Center. Do you concede that you have a gift of poetic ability? Is that what it is, or is it a skill that one works at like a sprinter trying to better her time?
I think the gift is more a gift of aspiration than of ability, because it's a skill. You know, there are skills you can learn, and the more seriously you apply yourself to the learning of a skill, the better your skills become. Practice makes perfect.
Continuing on that track and field analogy, what's a good poetic workout for you? What's a good poetic workout for anyone?
Emily Dickinson. Sit and read one Emily Dickinson poem and try to figure out what was going through her mind. And then just savor the quirky little images she presents and the interesting turns of phrase. Why does she put a dash there? Why does she not use normal punctuation? And just read one and then leave a book open and spend your day doing what you do, and then maybe once in a while go back and just read the poem again. Don't try to get it. Just read it and think, this is me, and I am reading a poem by Emily Dickinson. When people say, what did you do on Monday? I read a poem by Emily Dickinson. Just enjoy it for that. That's a workout.
You taught at UConn and were the Poet Laureate of the state of Connecticut. Our most recent connection to Connecticut, of course, is Newtown, which led me to think about trying to put something like that into words. And that translated into a question about subject matter. To write about good stuff or to write about bad stuff. Is one more effortless than the other?
Well, in history, I think good stuff and bad stuff are so intricately intertwined that even if you start off planning to write about something painful, you discover good things along the way.
Yeah.
And if you start, you know, and the same is true in the other direction.
If you were to write something, for instance, a poet were to write something about Newtown, they'd be writing in reaction to something. You write about race and civil liberties and African-American history. Is your writing a reaction?
Well, a reaction, a response. I very seldom write about current events, so I don't usually react to things in that way. I do research and try to make sense of things that happened in the past, try to reinvent them, try to recreate them. So I don't know. It's a reaction to something I've researched. Usually, I don't know how to answer that question.
Yeah, I usually come up with lots of questions that people don't know how to answer. So that's
okay. These are good questions.
Thanks.
I'm impressed.
Your list of awards and fellowships and prizes and recognition is long and impressive. What's the most gratifying result that came from writing a poem or compiling a book for you? Suppose there's lots of them.
There are lots of them. Awards are wonderful, and to be honored is ironically humbling.
I sort of imagined that you were going to say, you know, it isn't any of the awards that I've received, but I remember this young gentleman who came up to me.
My first thought was a five-year-old who ran up to me after a reading last week, threw his arms around me and said, I love your poems. Oh, that was great. Then I thought, well, that's what everybody would say, but that happens not frequently, but yeah. It happens.
Yeah. Byproduct of what you do and how you do it, I'm sure. Please, Marilyn Nelson, grace us with something by Marilyn Nelson, recited by Marilyn Nelson, if you would, please.
This one. This is from a series of poems about a village that was settled in Upper Manhattan in 1825. It was settled by free black people. And it was called Seneca Village, and it lasted until 1867, when it was destroyed in the creation of Central Park. This is in the voice of an older woman who lives in the village.
Okay.
It's called Conductor. When did my knees learn how to forecast rain? And my hairbrush start yielding silver curls. Of late, a short walk makes me short of breath, and every day begins and ends with pain. Just yesterday I was raising my girls. Now I'm alone and making friends with death. So let the railroad stop at my back door for a hot meal. What do I have to lose? The Lord has counted the hairs on my head and made a little space under my floor. All I ask of life is to be of use. There'll be time to be careful when I'm dead. Birth is a one-way ticket to the grave. I've learned that much slowly over the years, watching my body age. Time is a thief. And what we give away is all we can save. So bring on the runaways. I know no fear. Let life have meaning, if it must be brief.
There's a pre-talk event coming up on the 23rd when you are in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and it's called The Magic of Words. And Marilyn Nelson, you are a magician.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for being with us here on Spectrum West, and thanks for giving us not only some wonderful words to read, but some powerful, important thoughts to ponder.
Thank you.